Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to Studio G and the Discussions for Women in Leadership. We will continue our focus this week on how the styles and principles of an Omega leader can influence leadership. Here in the studio this week, we have with us Lori Beth Jones, speaker, author of 14 books, and the book leading our discussion today, Jesus CEO. Welcome, Lori Beth.
Thank you. Very good to be here.
Good to have you. Representing the business pillar is Vicki Arteaga. Welcome, Vicki.
Thank you. Great to be here.
And, of course, Elisa Holston, representing the education pillar. Welcome, Elisa.
Thank you very much, and good evening.
These weekly shows on developing women in leadership have become a passion for each of us here at Studio G. So this week we are going to move into our show to focus on becoming an Omega leader around the concept of the Omega leader summarizes. And before we jump into how an Omega leader boils things down, Lori, can you frame for us and the listeners the definition of an Omega leader, please?
Only because repetition is the hallmark of genius.
Nice.
And learning, right? Education.
That's right.
We keep saying this, but the Omega leader is someone who understands the alpha style of leadership, which is authoritative, my way or the highway, do this, the take charge model, and the beta style, which is the cooperative collaborative model, what shall we do here, let's think this through together, and then it's linked to the higher power of God, which is, Father, you know, what do you want me to do? So the Omega leader is able to transcend and combine those two styles into a third, which is what the essence of Jesus CEO is and what Jesus did.
Excellent.
Very clear. So tonight we're talking about boiling it down. How would you give us an overview of what it means to boil it down?
Well, in preparing for the show, there's a couple of things. One is Abraham Lincoln, you know, the Gettysburg Address, was, 336 words, and it summarized the angst and the heartache and the sacrifice and the desire for reconciliation of 4 years and thousands of lives lost, and it was only 300 words. And someone said, President Lincoln, that, you know, that's amazing that you said it in only 300 words. And he said, I would have made it shorter, but I didn't have enough time.
Mm.
And what it means, in order to boil it down, it takes a lot of time and thought. This is not about blurting the first thing that comes to your mind.
Sure.
It's about being very clear about what it is you came, you know, the point you want to make. And kind of a funny story that we were reflecting on. I have a friend of mine who did computer repairs in a particular culture that is known for its economical use of words. And she was in charge of all the computer systems for this particular group. And she said this is how they would call her up. The phone would ring, she'd pick it up, and they'd say, Sue, broke, and then they'd hang up. Sue would know that she had to go fix it, and they figured that, you know, she could recognize her voice, and, you know, they didn't have to go into all the details. So I thought that is pure economy of words there.
Mm. Yeah. Why would an Omega leader want to boil it down? Why? What's the point? What's the purpose in a leader boiling down her message?
Well, because the longer your tail, the easier it is to get trapped.
Okay.
And
elaborate on it.
Okay. I grew up in Texas, and there's lizards, you know, and the longer the lizard's tail was, the easier it was to catch it. So kind of a humorous thing is the shorter your words, the less you're going to get tangled up in them.
Okay.
There's fewer things that people can argue with or, you know, try to get all caught up in. And I believe the fewer words you speak, the more clear you are about your thinking and your thought, unless you're being impulsive and just blurting something out.
Sure. I was thinking the same thing as you were. Just as you were responding, I was thinking that being forced to kind of boil it down and to clarify it not only benefits your followers, but it truly, I think, benefits your own vision as a
mm-hmm.
leader,
mm-hmm.
you know, ensuring that you yourself have clarity.
And not everybody has, I think that's a gift. There are people that, you know, it's easier for them to summarize your book. For those that is not easy, what techniques or exercise do you think could be useful for a leader that doesn't come natural for them to summarize?
Well, probably if they're in a leadership role, if they've attained that role, they're probably pretty good at communication and boiling it down. What are the three things that need to be done to grow this company? You know, what are the two or three things that we need to do right now to take charge? People can focus on simple things, but beyond that, the mind just goes into overload. That's why phone numbers are the number of digits that they are. They have shown that people can group numbers in, what, groups of twos and threes and fours, but beyond that, people can't memorize it. So it's not that we're ignorant or not capable of understanding complex thoughts, but a leader's job, particularly when you're going into an alpha mode where you need to take charge, is really about boiling it down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think discernment, too, is, you know, God looks, man looks at appearances, but God looks on the heart. Like Jesus, I'm thinking of him walking up to the man by the pool and asking him, "Do you want to be healed?"
Mm-hmm.
That was boiling it down. And that was also discernment.
Yeah.
So looking to the heart of a situation, not all the words and not all the fluffy things, but, you know, do you really want to be healed? And I'm thinking of a consulting thing I did just recently where there'd been about 6 months of turmoil in this team. And finally I had a conversation with this one gal who was a wind, who was stirring up a lot of dust. And I just asked her, I said, "Do you really want to be here?" Because the perception is that you don't. And it just shocked her. And she thought about it, and, you know, she kind of burbled on and da-da-da-da-da. But the next week, she came back with a whole different attitude and has since become like a star player. So boiling it down to that question, do you really want to be here?
Mm-hmm.
Instead of dealing with all the peripheral issues she was stirring up just for the attention.
Yeah.
So that was boiling it
down. One of the things that pops into my head, obviously, is leading from an elemental perspective and having the different elemental types who either want more information or want less information. How would you handle that process of boiling things down when you have different elements that want different pieces of information?
It's a great question.
Well, clarity is power for any element, for any combination. So that's why our mission statement process, I think, has resonated literally around the world with people, because it's taking a life purpose and making it simple for anybody to understand. now, to your point, and we had this discussion before the show, and I wanted to go to Alyssa to talk about fire, wind, water, and earth. What are some of the challenges of fire boiling it down?
Oh, now I'm on the spot. The teacher's getting the quiz here. Well, the fire will just be perhaps go to an emotional level or just boil it down too much and perhaps label. You know, just come from a place of emotion in a sense and just label, just kind of be that spontaneous flare up and sometimes some of us, we're on a talk show, but sometimes some of the more radical, polarizing talk show hosts or hostesses tend to do that, perhaps on purpose to generate controversy and thus conversation. But that's a real tendency of a fire, just to throw something out there, watch it burn.
Yes.
Dare we mention any names here?
Yes, near we not. But fires are typically talk show hosts or have talk shows, fire-wind combinations, so they really make a living stirring things up. And the way to do it is to throw down a one or two word label like traitor, coward, liar. You know, those are words that apply to the reptilian brain, which is fight or flight. So the danger of a fire is being incendiary without being insightful.
Mm-hmm.
So let's talk about wind. You get an A plus.
All right.
Good job.
Am I still on?
Yes,
you're still on. The wind. Let me think. I have a hard time focusing on what the wind might be saying here. Let me see. We're laughing because we used to think I was a double fire, but we've now decided I'm a win, have a tendency to elaborate perhaps too much and get lost in extraneous details, not details for the sake of clarification, but just elaboration, and it would be very easy to kind of go off on a tangent as they're painting the picture. Sometimes it's tied to a win's desire or need for attention as well.
Very, very well
said.
So
winds would have a hard time boiling it down.
Yes.
They can't find the period.
Yeah, and they want to tell you what happened along the way and
how it happened.
Yes, and how
it
happened and who was there and what they had for lunch on the way and what they saw and all that. Okay, so water, what would be the challenge of a water element boiling it down?
The risk of offending any waters out there, just knowing what the point is. Because it's all good.
Yeah, we have very little water on this team around the table, let me tell you.
It's all good, and it's much more about relationships. Another paradigm of you mean task-oriented versus people-oriented, and the water tends to be more people-oriented, not so much task-oriented. So they're much more interested perhaps in the interaction as opposed to the communication.
Oh, very, very good. And then finally, the earth.
Well, the earth... is deceivingly similar to the wind. The wind, they both have in common its details, but the wind is for elaboration, whereas the earth is just, gets lost in the details, and we were talking that perhaps what they see is they will want to describe each and every tree in the forest, but really the essence of boiling it down is just coming up with two or three words to describe the forest, not describe every single tree in the forest and what the leaves look like. So drilling down too much that they lose sight of the big picture.
Wow, that is very, very good. And I think, too, for each element, if you get lost in trying to boil it down, go back to your core value. You know, when the fire's core value is results, and the earth's core value is growth, and the water's core value is bringing life and relationships, and the wind is basically getting attention. And it's important for winds to get attention.
Not that there's anything wrong with
no,
that.
No, there is nothing. Because the winds are the life-bearing, they bear the seeds in the sense of spring and also danger. So... I thought that was a very, very good summary.
Thank you. Being the teacher that I am, though, I'm going to flip it again
okay.
here. And coming back to kind of Shelley's initial question, which is a good question, we kind of took it back. So what I described were just the challenges that the leader faces given her element.
Mm-hmm.
So kind of going back to Shelley's point, you know, is there any more specific insight in regards to I'm a fire wind or double fire leading a water?
Right.
So... which elements need things boiled down to fewer words, and which elements really need a little more elaboration and more words to have that mission and that vision, that direction clear for them? Is there any correlation on the receiver's end?
Yes, and I did this when I was coaching somebody today. If you draw a quadrant and you just put the elements, the earth, water, wind, and fire symbols, if you're communicating as an Omega leader, make sure that you hit all of those quadrants in your communication.
Okay.
So you could say, particularly if you're speaking to a group of engineers or Earth-like people, they are going to want the facts, but they still need, this is what we need to do, and I have prepared a handout for you with the details. You know?
Okay.
And then you go to the waters and you say, by doing this, we will enhance the core relationships of this company. And anybody who has questions can gather around me afterwards. You know, that's waters will want to gather around opportunities.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the winds, you could say, this is really going to be exciting, and we really need your energy around this, and can't wait to give you the detail. Well, no, you wouldn't say that to a wind. What? Help me here. What would you say to a wind? Can't wait to fly together. Yeah.
See what adventures await us. And
yeah. We'll keep you posted.
Keep them guessing.
Yeah, keep them guessing. Keep them hovering. And then to the earth, we already did the earth.
The fires.
To the fires, you would say, this is what we need to do to get control.
Forward line.
Get control, gain territory.
Okay. So it's about that forward motion
for the
fire. So what you're saying is that you're basically kind of hitting on the core value of each of those elements and providing kind of differentiation within your message without necessarily providing too much elaboration.
Right. And what we teach, what we're planning on teaching with our decision matrix is that whenever you're facing a challenge, to make sure that you have addressed each of those quadrants. Because if you miss them, you will not get the buy-in
right
from basically 75% of your team.
Sure, and I've lived that. I think education, you know, that depending on secondary versus elementary, but there's diversity in terms of the elements on my staff, and I do. I face those challenges of talking too much or not saying enough, or you know. So it's that was very insightful for me as a leader.
And that leads me to the other question: is there a wrong time to boil it down? How do we know that it's the right time to boil it down, or how do we know that we need to be a little bit more descriptive, or you know, and we talk about that sometimes. It's depending on the culture that you are facing.
Right, right.
Or,
well, let's talk about that because you are our multilingual expert, speaking three languages and coming from another country and assimilating into the United States and at a very high level. So tell us about an example that comes to mind about the American tendency to boil things down and how it doesn't fly necessarily with
yeah.
other cultures.
So in business, I noticed that, you know, the American culture is very to the point sometimes to we're going to have an agreement or I'm trying to get your business and this is going to be our first visit, but I already have a draft of the contract.
Exactly.
So for some cultures, that might be a little bit rude, assuming that we're going to sign a contract on the first date,
yes.
on the first meeting. And so there's a point there not to have when I used to teach at San Diego State how to do business in Latin America, we studied certain different cultures, and we talk about what is the timing of somebody doing business in Costa Rica, for example, and the difference between that and somebody doing business in Brazil or somebody doing business in Mexico
mm-hmm.
with somebody from North America. And it varies depending on who wants the business the most. So if you really want that business, then probably you need to flex your style and adjust to the other country, the tempo of the negotiations of the other country.
Yes.
And there's going to be a point that you need to boil it down to when you get to the price or the... But, you know,
yeah,
down the road.
Well, I'd love to have sat in on that course. I mean, Vicki is just brilliant. Yeah, boiling it down is so powerful. And there's a quote that I've been thinking about a lot ever since I read it. And it is this. It's Frank Lloyd Wright, who, as many of you know, was an amazing, egocentric, self-promoting, and truly visionary architect in the United States and America. And what many people probably don't know is that he actually made his living mostly by selling Japanese art prints. That he
wow.
was a world expert in Japanese art prints. And when his career was flagging and he couldn't get a commission and he did a lot of controversial things that upset people, he made his living selling art.
Oh, wow, I didn't know that.
Yeah, so he has a quote that has really touched me, and it is this. I'm going to count the words. 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7. It could almost be my life philosophy. You are what you notice, nothing more.
Wow.
Okay, done.
I'll say it again. You are what you notice, nothing more.
Powerful.
And, you know, this man made his living dealing in beauty, creating beauty, selling beauty, thinking about beauty. So if, let's say you have whiners on their team, what are they noticing?
Yeah,
all the things that are wrong.
Negative.
Jesus, when you think about what he noticed on his walks, the baby bird that had fallen to the ground, the little wisp of hair on an old man's head, you know, that hyper awareness of the beauty and the tenderness of the world, it is just amazing. And so I'd like to challenge our listeners to think about this next week. What are you noticing? Because that's who you are.
And you just, let me ask you a question. That strikes me, and I wonder too, as part of you know, growing and developing as a person, that perhaps if what we naturally see is the negative, if that's, can we retrain ourselves? Is there a choice? Is there volition involved in choosing to see beauty? Or
yes.
Choosing to see need and respond constructively to that need? Is that something
yes.
that you believe we can retrain ourselves?
Absolutely. And I think that is part of the regeneration that Jesus talked about, is you will be a new creation to see as God sees. I mean, wouldn't that be amazing to really see people the way Jesus sees them? The challenge for me is to look at the people that are nailing his hands to the cross and see them as someone who's confused and not understanding what they're doing.
Mm-hmm.
That's,
yeah.
that's a choice of how
yeah.
to see somebody that is literally killing you.
Yeah.
And, you know, I was having a conversation with my friend Catherine, who has been on the show with us, and talking about my mother, who is an artist, and she's 89, and she has macular degeneration, and she's lost one eye, pretty much the sight in one eye, and 2 weeks ago we learned that she's about to lose sight in the other eye. And as children, we're agonizing over this and weeping, and yet when I've talked to Mom, she doesn't even bring it up. She tells me about her puppy, and she
mm-hmm.
tells me about how much she loves her yoga class and how grateful she is to have children who love her and to live in Sedona, and never once mentions that. And so I was talking to Catherine, and she said, your mother had made a choice
mm-hmm.
of what to notice.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not the loss of her vision, but the joy in what she has every day.
Mm-hmm.
And, I mean, this is a powerful quote.
Yeah, it is powerful.
You
yeah.
can go
yeah.
to a movie and watch the same movie and come
mm-hmm.
out and explain the bottom line of the movie, and you could have
mm-hmm.
four or five different. What do you notice?
Mm-hmm. Well, and the thing is, in our society, particularly when we've got talk show hosts that are sarcastic and full of hate, and, you know, make a living by tearing flesh. Sarcasm means actually tearing flesh from the bone. News makes a living and sells newspapers, although they're not doing
mm-hmm.
so well selling newspapers.
Mm-hmm.
It's controversy and... So we're constantly bombarded by the negative
mm-hmm.
crashes, deaths, murders, you know, who's screwing whom, pardon the French there. And it's so easy to become cynical. Everything, you know, is just really bad, and, you know, we're going to hell in a handbasket and all those other things, but just to wake up and what we notice that day.
Yeah, yeah. I just had an encounter this morning. I was sharing with Vicki and Shelley as we were chatting a little bit, an encounter with a parent this morning who, our school is a bilingual school, and so we do all school events and our opening time in both languages, and the children alternate. They have a piece builder pledge. It's their kind of their character education, their commitment to being a good character. And so we alternate days, a Spanish day and an English day. There's a parent that's expressed some dissatisfaction with the fact that it's in Spanish, rooted a little bit in some perceptions that she has. And it's interesting because it's all a matter of what you choose to see. You know, 99% of the people who observe that are just overjoyed by the diversity that it represents and the promotion of multilingualism and the skills that provides for the students. But this one parent chooses to see that as an attack, as a negative, something that's taking away rather than contributing and enriching her own child's life. And frankly, it's very, very sad.
Mm-hmm.
But it's a choice.
Yes.
Part.
And I think there's, as leaders, this is something we have to be careful of, because we can choose who gets the attention.
Hmm.
And it's quite often, it's the troublemakers.
Sure.
And the negative people. And we can... my friend Catherine and I talked too when she was a consultant and a speaker, and she would get evaluations, and she could have 100 evaluations, and they would rank her 4.9 out of 5, and she'd get one that was a 4.3, and she would obsess over it, and
yeah.
she could not go to sleep, and she thought, what did I do wrong? And, you know, like the 99 sheep that were there.
Right.
What about the 99 sheep that are there?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, and it's interesting, even with that parent today, I think I finally, part of it was I kind of communicated to her that I wasn't going to engage. You know, I said, we're going to agree to disagree. I'm not going to convince
mm-hmm.
you, but I respect you for being straightforward, but it is. It's choosing not to perseverate on that or be concerned about that or to be
right.
anxious about it because it's not going to change, but I can do focus on the positive
yeah.
and those that do appreciate it.
And I think, too, with the energy coaching that we teach in our PATH coaching program, I've used that a lot to look where the energy is going. And to your point about how do you learn how to boil things down,
mm-hmm.
you can kind of sense where someone's energy is, where their words, both through their vocabulary, their body language, and where your own energy is going, and how does it feel at this moment, you know, checking into your physical being. What's your state of
mm-hmm.
being? Are you poised in this moment? And Shelley is communicating some anxiety, it seems, about the time. that we still have time to talk more about where we're going.
Yeah.
I thought you were giving me the wrap it up.
Oh, no, not yet.
No,
okay. We got about 4 minutes here, Lizeth. So the word choice, I want to just focus on that for a second. When you wrote this book, Using Ancient Wisdom for Visionary Leadership, and coined Omega Leader as a distinct way for people to move in and through becoming more of a visionary, more of the kind of leader that wasn't authoritative or, you know, that wasn't, you know, bent towards my way or the highway. You wrote this book and divided it into three sections.
Mm-hmm.
And the section that we're talking about this evening happens to be the strength of action.
Mm-hmm.
So choice, what is behind choice? I can make a choice, but I've got to make an action, right?
Right.
I've got to step up and make an action.
Right.
Or take an action, or be consciously aware that my action is going to either create more visionariness in my leadership or less. And so I think one of the things that strikes me about this particular section is the action.
Mm-hmm.
Because if we're looking at Jesus as the role model here for leadership, then I have to do something. I can
right.
choose to do the same thing that I'm doing now
right.
and get the same result,
right.
or I can choose a different way. So that's kind of striking me right now, is that whole choose word.
Yeah.
I don't know why, but,
mm-hmm.
you know, it takes action. It takes action to change. So this week as a leader, as you know, we are getting ready here in a couple minutes to jump off, you know, what do I do this week? How do I change? As you said, maybe it's become ingrained in us. Maybe it's a habit. We're used to doing it this way, and I can't change. What do I do?
Yeah, and I think this links to the previous conversation that we have when it's called the question.
Mm-hmm.
So, okay, these are the circumstances, so now what? What are you going to do?
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So it's boiled to,
mm-hmm.
so what? Right?
Yeah.
Are you going to...
Yes, yeah. I was trained as a counselor, a telephone counselor, and we would take call-ins of people who had problems or challenges. And we were trained to listen no more than 3 minutes to the story. Everybody has a story. And then every volunteer asked this question. All right, given all that has happened and where you are right now, what are you going to do? What are you going to do now?
Yeah,
boil it down and always put choice back on that person instead of trying to solve it or even getting, you know, get involved in the drama of it.
Mm.
And this is the essence of Jesus that I think differentiates us from some people's concept, which is Jesus turns it back to us. How shall we feed these people, Philip?
Mm. Yeah.
Instead of, yo, sandwiches over here. This is the kind of Christian I want to be, the thoughtful Christian, the action-taking Christian, the one that doesn't just have a knee-jerk reaction to a reptilian firebomb, but really thinks through what God would say. Jesus said, let your yes be yes, and your no be no. Clarity is power. Thank you all for listening, and good night.